You are listening to Arts on the Air, a bi-weekly-ish interview show dedicated to Savannah, Georgia's artists, musicians, and authors. Each episode will feature a guest in conversation about their philosophy, practice, and current projects, as well as their thoughts on the state of the arts in our community of Savannah. Our theme music is a clip of Summer Nights by the Eric Jones Trio. It's provided by our friend Mark Chesnow, who plays with the Eric Jones Trio every Thursday and Sunday at Good Times Jazz Bar downtown. Hey everyone, welcome to Arts on the Air. This is Tamara Garvey, and I have the pleasure of sitting down with Molly Cusick. Welcome, Molly.
Hi.
Happy to have you.
Yeah, happy to be here.
And just to introduce you briefly, Molly has kind of by tracks of her art. She does both photography and pottery. And I'm going to read just a little bit from your bio about your photography. With camera in hand, Molly's ability to be absolutely present with her surroundings allows her to capture images that are exquisitely mundane and extraordinarily sacred. It's beautiful. I love even the verbiage in it is kind of like grandiose.
Yeah.
You know, like exquisitely mundane. It's a little bit like a
juxtaposition.
A juxtaposition. That's it. And just for everybody listening, Molly has, you have an Instagram for your photography, and it's Molly Cusick Photography, and then a separate Instagram for your ceramics, and it's Molly Cusick Pottery. And then your website is basically your photography.
Yes.
Okay. Just to kind of start from the beginning, how did you get into art in the first place, and were you sort of working on both of these tracks concurrently, or did one happen before the other?
So I grew up in a household where my dad was a hobbyist photographer, and so I started shooting pretty early on. I got my first, my own camera when I was 14, and then and my mom at the time, she was helping out with his hospital, but on the side she was doing crafts, so she would sew our clothes. She would make Cabbage Patch Kids.
Oh.
And out of the, she'd get the doll heads and then,
oh my gosh,
sew up Cabbage Patch Kids.
Like artisanal Cabbage Patch Kids?
Yeah. And, doll clothes and things like that. Little dollhouse things. And there was just a creative household that I grew up in. And the pottery, I didn't start doing until college.
Okay.
So I went to Lesley University to start with early childhood education. And partway through that education, I was like, oh, I don't know about this. and I took a pottery class and fell in love with it. The teacher, we meshed really well, and she asked me to be a TA for her class.
Oh.
So then I taught 30 people how to throw on a wheel and was like, never need to do that again.
And you were new to the whole field.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah. Yeah. So I picked it up pretty quickly.
Yeah. Like you were good at wheel. I feel like people are either good at the wheel or they're just not at all.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. And sculpture as well. And so that gave me, cause I was starting as I did that and I was like, oh, well maybe I could be an art teacher instead of just an early childhood education teacher. And even after that experience, I was like, oh, that's gonna make me crazy to teach people for 60 years how to throw on the wheel. So
what about it was making you crazy?
Well, it just the repetition. I like to do lots of different things and change it up all the time.
Yeah.
And it just felt constraining.
Because you would be doing the same kind of intro techniques and
I guess,
projects also.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, at the time it was just what do I really want? What am I doing here?
Yeah,
And so eventually I decided, what am I waiting for? I'd always wanted to take photography education. I wanted to go into that. But I thought, oh, once I have my, real degree, then I can go study that. And I finally got to the point where I was like, what am I doing? I should just go study photography. That's what I want. So I transferred over to the Art Institute of Boston shortly after that and didn't finish, but got enough, of a foundation to just continue on. Got a little bit of honing in my technique and, the way I looked at the world.
Of photography and ceramics or just photography?
Just photography.
Okay. Were you, the camera that you got when you were 14, was that a film camera?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a Nikon F, and it was all film, all through school. Right at the cusp, when digital just started to become a thing, and I was so sad because my days in the darkroom, I was just I just loved it.
I really liked it, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember going in high school and in college that there was a darkroom around. So
yeah.
It's a little bit
so much fun, like just getting your hands in the chemicals and like watching the image appear out of nowhere. Like it's just, and like dodging and burning and like playing with the different techniques. I just loved it.
Yeah, there's a whole like control part of the finished art, just when you're like you're working the enlargers and like how long you leave it exposed under the enlarger and how long you leave it in the various chemicals. Like exactly. You are controlling things that way too.
Yeah.
Is that, I guess basically Photoshop has like taken the place of
that
entire realm?
Kind of. So it's interesting, like the way I've always done it is I've just been kind of on the fly. So when I was in school, I was more of like a purist where I was like, I'm not doing Photoshop. Like I don't want to mess with my pictures. They're like, the pictures are the pictures when I take them. And so I didn't even take Photoshop when I was there, which was, in hindsight, really dumb.
Yeah. Like cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Yeah, kind of dumb. So so I still to this day don't have like a clear, like real working knowledge of Photoshop. Like I can get in there and do what I need to do just like very basically.
Yeah.
But I don't use Photoshop. Like I just, yeah. Just
so that's one thing to know about your photos. They're not very manipulated at all.
Not really. No. Yeah. I clean them up. I basically like turn down the brightness often and I'll turn up the saturation a little bit. But for the most part, like what you see is what I saw.
What kinds of subject matter were you taking photos of in college?
I kind of similar to what I'm doing. It's landscape, but I really actually got into like abandoned places and things falling apart and like structures that nature was overtaking, the buildings. And I would like drive out, so I was studying in Boston and I would drive out to Western Mass and just find like derelict places. Like I would just get lost on the back roads and shoot out there.
Is it like farmland out there?
Kind of? Yeah, it's kind of farmland. It's rural. There's a lot of properties that just haven't been taken care of very well, but like you just see the history.
Yeah.
You know, and there's like these houses that it's almost like junkyards, like with the amount of stuff that's just hanging around, just falling apart, and it's just so gorgeous.
So you could just get out of your car and kind of go and poke around a little bit. Would there be people around? Like
sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah. There was one place where I was taking pictures and somebody came out and they were really upset and I was like, I'm so sorry. But they were upset because they thought I was like city planning people. Coming out to like take pictures of the
to make them an offer for their property or something,
or like to give them fines or whatever, you know. And I was like, no, I just think this is beautiful.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, okay.
Did they like that?
They were a little confused.
Yeah,
because my sense of beauty is a little different than what other people think is
you were
beautiful.
Taking a photo of like their junky barn or something.
Yeah like peeling paint and rusty old cars and things like that. So
yeah. How did your critiques go in college? Did people like your images?
Yeah. So for the most part, it was well received, but there was a point where in that project, one of my teachers basically said, you know, this is kind of classist, you know, you're this middle class white girl going out to bumpkin town and exploiting the poor, you know, like that's basically kind of what he was saying. And I was like, oh, I was heartbroken because that's absolutely not what I was doing. And I was like, really like enjoying the beauty of the places. And so that kind of was the final straw for me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I was having a lot of anxiety at that time, like panic attacks and things like that. And so it was just hard all around. And when that was like how my work was being received, I was just like, that's it.
Yeah.
I'm out of here.
Like for whatever reason, that school or just that school in particular,
that teacher
were not into your
stuff. Yeah,
yeah.
It was just one teacher.
That one professor.
You know, there was a couple other professors who loved the stuff that I was coming out with. So, but for whatever reason, I kind of, that just really got in under my skin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you left school then?
Yeah.
How old were you then?
I was 20, 21.
Okay.
Something like that.
And you were living in Boston. Then did you stay in Boston for a while?
I did. Yeah. Okay. I had some pretty crazy jobs. I was working for a marketing company, and so I was a cigarette girl, going out to the bars and clubs and like getting people to sign up with their IDs to get free cigarettes and Milky Way, like in a Polaroid. I was like doing like events.
That's
at
so funny.
Bars and clubs.
Well, like, Polaroid, I guess at least is
yeah,
applicable.
Kind of. Yeah.
Did you ever use Polaroid cameras?
Like just for fun.
I love the look of a Polaroid.
Yeah.
There's something about when you take photos of people with Polaroids that like everybody looks looks great. Your face just looks really great. Totally. I don't know if it's because it doesn't show any details.
Yeah, it's the smoothing effect.
Yeah, that's right. I always feel like I look very attractive in a Polaroid. Yeah, totally. So I miss that.
Yeah.
And then how did you end up in Savannah? Your mom lives here too. Did she move here first?
Yeah, my mom has been here for like 17 years. And I visited lots over the years, and I never in a thousand years thought I would live in the South. So at this point, like after school, I decided to study body work. And so I went out to a school in Santa Barbara to study massage and Reiki. And then eventually I started studying cranial psychotherapy, which is what I also do now. And lived out there for most of my adult life. So okay. I was traveling.
In Santa Barbara?
Yeah.
It sounds so glamorous and beautiful. It just sounds like a soap opera.
Yeah.
What is it like
there?
It was
a soap opera.
Is it? Okay.
Like that was actually, there was a TV show called Santa Barbara.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. Was it weird to be just like a single person with like a normal little apartment or something? Is the whole town kind of mansions and stuff?
Yeah. It's, there's way more money than there should be there. You know, yeah. It's a weird place. It's a very white place.
Okay.
And I loved it because of the mountains and the ocean are just like right there. So
yeah.
You always have access to like beautiful outdoor spaces.
So were you still all through this period, were you like taking off on different trips and still doing your photography?
Yeah. And I wasn't really making much money with my art at that point. So I was doing personal assisting. I was working in a post-production house, like managing the office. I was doing like odd jobs basically.
Yeah.
Like I've never had like a real true 9-to-5.
Yeah. You weren't any kind of like office Monday to Friday
things. I just couldn't do it.
Were you thinking all this time, were you thinking that like what you wanted to eventually do was to be able to live on your art, or were you just thinking, oh, I'm just stringing these jobs together and...
Yeah, it was, well, with the body work, you know, that really took off in California. So I was able to live, pretty well at the end there, doing body work, but personal assisting as well. But yeah, that was always a hope, was to be able to live off of what I was creating, but it just like self-esteem and like really just getting things off the ground was really difficult. Especially out there.
So you were going on kind of trips and you were like amassing a bunch of images, but just not like printing them or turning them into products or things like that.
Yeah,
just like we're building up a portfolio.
I guess so. And it's just so expensive to print things, you know, realistically, and to like just drag those around. You know, so I wouldn't print very much.
Yeah.
I would share it online. And my mom's always been my biggest cheerleader. And so all along as I was like developing more skill and more of like my... style, she was incredibly supportive. So she was always trying to get my work here in Savannah and like different places wherever she was. So I was selling more here always ever than I was selling anywhere else. You know,
how was it? So you were getting some prints made and then like sending it to her kind of?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Exactly. And it was her idea to start like printing on the metal. Like I hadn't
cool.
seen it. She came across it and she's like, oh my gosh, your work would look so good on this. Like you should try it. And so I started, and ever since like I've been.
That's cool. Was she sort of out in galleries here in town and like noticed other photographers printed on metal?
No, she ran across somebody at a show, like some craft art and craft show.
Yeah.
And they had metal prints, and like that was the first time she'd ever seen it.
It does seem like a newish kind of technology.
Yeah. It's really starting to take off. So there's more and more people around town that have it.
So the years that you were living in Santa Barbara, were you like kind of going out to galleries? Did you have other artist friends at all? Was that sort of part of the town?
A little bit.
Yeah.
My friends were more in like the bodywork spiritual world side of things there. And the art scene is definitely not like it is here. It's a little bit more limited. At this point, though, it's growing. Like, there's a lot more artists there now.
Yeah.
But at that point, it wasn't a big of a thing, so.
And then, so what year did you pick up and come to Savannah?
Well, so I lived, so after Santa Barbara, then I was in San Francisco, Grass Valley, kind of tooling around in the Northern California, and then came back to Santa Barbara, and then the Thomas fire came through and like burned down the property I was living on. And it was like my absolute favorite place to live. Like I lived on the tippy top of this mountain all by myself.
Wow.
Like it was the most glorious place. The views were out of this world, like 360 degree views, like mountains behind me, ocean in front of me. And, so I was pretty devastated. And it took a while. Like, I just kind of hunkered down. A friend of mine let me live with her. She was amazing. She's one of my artist friends.
Oh, cool.
She's an incredible painter. And Joel Freeland. And so she let me live in her art studio while I was, like, getting my shit together, basically.
Yeah.
And just getting through the grief part. And then as that was happening, then I realized, like, my slate basically got wiped clean.
Was this, like a fire is scheduled to be coming through and you just have to get in your car and just
it was massive
go
it was yeah. a massive fire. It blew from Santa Paula, I believe it was Santa Paula where it started, and then it like went straight out to the coast in Ventura, like really fast, like very scarily fast. A lot of people didn't have any time to grab anything.
Yeah.
And I just kept thinking, it's not going to come up the coast. Like, it's there's no way it's going to come all the way from Ventura to Santa Barbara.
How far is that?
Far.
Okay.
Yeah. At the time that the Thomas fire happened, it was the biggest fire that California had ever seen.
Wow.
Since then, of course, there's been lots of other massive fires.
Did everybody just get in their car and like drive east basically?
Yeah. So it kind of was a little bit more gradual. By the time it was coming up the coast, it was like a little bit more of a slower process. And the smoke basically got me out of there more than anything. Like the day that I left, I just had massive headaches from, like, you couldn't see. Like, the whole space around the house was just smoke.
Wow.
So I packed a few things thinking, you know, it'll just pass through or it won't come here.
Yeah, like you thought the smoke would be the worst part of it.
Yeah, so I just left town with, like, some stuff in my car and went up the coast where the air was a little bit better and just hoped for the best. And the fire just kept coming, and so I just kept going further north.
Wow.
To just keep having clean air, and then I found out it all burned down. So at that point, like I said, my slate was wiped clean, and so I was really like, okay, now what? I was doing way too much. I was basically supporting four other businesses besides my own. And I was just like, I was frazzled, and it was a wake up call. And I was like, okay, I really need to decide what's important. And that's when the tree project was born. And so I decided I really wanted to go and shoot the trees before they're, you know, all gone, especially like with this climate change stuff. It was like really in my face.
Like certain key major trees, basically.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And so I started to think about that. And then, when I started to drive up north to go start the project, I decided I wanted to go to the redwoods because they feel like my family tree.
Yeah.
You know, like they just feel like my favorite.
It's kind of the most famous trees in the U.S.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Iconic.
Exactly. Yeah. So so when I was driving up to there, then, that's when the first dream happened where, the tree, like when I was waking up from a nap, this tree like flashed its image in my mind's eye three times, and I was just like, what was that? You know, like that had never happened to me before. So that was like the beginning of that whole project, is like calling me up to those trees.
This is like before you went and saw the trees, you had this image of this tree flashing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like it kind of like texted me to my third eye, like, hey, this is me, like come find me.
What is your third eye?
So, if you don't know about chakras, there's chakra centers all up the center of your body. And the third eye is like where, people talk about like where your intuition comes from. And
okay.
It's in between your two regular eyes. Yeah. So it's an energy center.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So then you went to the redwoods and did you like literally like your eyes came upon the actual tree?
Yes.
At some point? Okay.
Yeah. The actual image that I was given when I woke up, is the image I have of that tree. Like I took that picture and I was like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I had seen. So
does the tree have a name?
I call it the tree of depth.
Okay.
Yeah. So when I sat with it, so it was a really sweet story. So after I got the image, I drove up to the forest that I, had decided was the one I needed to go to, Jedediah Smith. And, I was like, what trail? And so I just looked at all the trails and I was like, okay, I'll try this one. And I just started out on the path. And at one point I was like, I should go off trail around here. Like I just had that sense, that feeling. and I went around this one big tree and I sat down without looking at it, and then just dropped into some meditation for a little while, and then when I opened my eyes I was like,
you were there.
It was the tree. I was like, oh my god, it happened. You know, like, I was just like,
you kind of willed it into being from your meditation.
It feels like it.
It probably wasn't even there before you started.
Yeah, so that was the beginning of the tree pilgrimage. Yeah.
So you took this photo and then you were like, I'm really onto something. Basically, like your third eye was
it just felt like
promising.
A real, like, this was real. Like, this was a true calling. The trees were really, like, calling out to me to do this journey.
Yeah.
And come see them and listen to what they had to say energetically and go from there. And it's changed my life ever since. Like,
is it a little bit, so I'm not really good on the geography of California. Are the redwoods in danger of, like, these forest fires coming upon them, or?
They are and they aren't. So they're built for fire. Like, they're, the sequoias and the redwoods are, like, they're meant to weather through fires.
Wow.
And with the sequoias, actually, they need fire to reproduce. So their cones will open up after fires and then seed. So they won't do that without the fire.
Huh.
So in some sense, they need it. In other sense, it's at this point, it's really bad because they're getting so hot. These aren't normal forest fires.
Okay.
So they're not quite built for the tenacity of the
okay.
fire.
So if it was before climate change, they would have been okay with some fire coming through.
They need it.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so you did this kind of first tree, and then
and
your mom is still living in Savannah and still being like, it's amazing here.
Yes.
This is what I'm imagining, is how you came here.
Well, you know, she never expected me to live here either. And so where we were coming with this story is, circle back. So for 3 months at a time, I'd go out in my van, I'd go find the trees, and then I'd come back, work a little bit, make some more money, and then go back out on the road again. And so the first section of the project was all U.S. and one Mexico tree. And then coming up to the second phase of the whole project, I just had this feeling like I needed to go to New Zealand. And so I put together the trip out there, and as I say, I hit the pandemic jackpot, and I basically landed in New Zealand in February 2020.
Wow.
And with the expectation to, like, stay for 3 months, maybe six.
Like, that's how long a visa goes for?
Well, yeah, and that's how much money I had for, you know. So that was the plan, and I also had a feeling like I was going to be there longer than I expected. Like, I just kind of was like, I don't know, I don't think I'm coming back as soon as we think. And so I kind of wrapped up my California life. I never actually established, like, a whole house and all that stuff again.
Yeah.
After the fire, like, Jill had let me stay.
You're still in your friend's studio.
Yeah. And so I kind of just wrapped things up and drove my van out here to Savannah to park it. So while I'm away, like, it had somewhere to be. And then,
that's a long drive.
Oh yeah. I'm a big road tripper. So I did a big US trip.
You're a really good solo traveler.
Yes.
Yeah.
All my travel has been solo.
Okay.
But those are the best because you meet people that way. Like, when you travel with other people, you're less likely to just, like, happen upon someone.
Yeah, to branch out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I ended up being in New Zealand for 18 months. And when I felt this, like, okay, I probably should go back to the
U.S. Were you living in, like, an Airbnb or something the whole time, or what did you do?
So it was similar to here. I had a van, so I would, like, go and camp, like, freedom camp all over the country. And then when I was like, I need a break, I would get an Airbnb. And I had befriended this guy who had an Airbnb, and he was a pilot. And so he was, like, in and out of his house for most of the whole time. And so it worked out well. So I first started renting his, like, actual Airbnb, and then we became friends. And so he was like, just stay in my part of my house, you know, and, like, he charged me less money.
Yeah.
So it was amazing. Like,
wow.
Every step of the way, like, when I follow my intuition and I listen, the doors open and I'm supported. Like, the things all line up and people show up, and, you know, it's just been an amazing experience.
And you would just be like, I guess New Zealand is small-ish, so you could just set out on these different trips around and see kind of the whole country, right?
Yes. I basically saw almost every pocket of that country, North and South Island. Island. Wow. I spend a lot more time on the North Island because those were the forests that were calling to me. And the pilot's house was about an hour from the forest that I would go to most, the Firinaki Forest and the Yodawoda Forest, which I'm just so amazed. Like, the Yodawoda Forest has personhood, so it has the same rights as a person.
Oh.
Which is super cool.
What does Yodawoda mean?
Is that... I don't know.
Is that like from the native New Zealand language?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's Maori land. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the places, like, they call it, the people there are children of the mist, and people disappear out there. Like, it's pretty, like, mysterious. Huh. And a little bit dangerous.
Were you worried? Did you ever have any kind of...
I had some very interesting experiences there. Very interesting. But I was always... protected.
You're okay. Were you always by yourself going out?
Yeah.
On these trips? Okay. It's not always the best idea to be solo going out into forests in general.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's just how I roll.
Okay.
It's hard for me to drop in deep when there's other people. So it just changes it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Were you all this time, were you taking, digital photos at this point?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you can just rack up like infinite number of images, I guess.
Well, as much as your memory card will hold,
yeah,
and your hard drives will keep saved. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you were there for 18 months and then I'm so amazed by this. Like,
yeah.
Do you just kind of inadvertently through no fault of your own, you're just like overstaying your visa or whatever. So what did these countries, like, what happens when you're stranded in another country during a pandemic? Obviously they have to let you just stay.
Right. And it was, you know, at the beginning it was really scary. I was like, am I making the right decision? I'm so far away from everybody I know. And when the lockdown happened, it was like, it was the weirdest experience. Cause I was all by myself. And luckily, again, like, my intuition has really helped save me a lot. And before the country shut down, I basically was like, you know what? I'm getting a sense that something's about to go down. And so I was like, I better just get an Airbnb. So I had rented an Airbnb, and 2 days later, like, Jacinda gets on the on the TV and says, the country's shutting down in 48 hours. Like, take care of your stuff. And you won't be able to leave your house for, you know, 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And it ended up being 6 weeks. But so I sat in this house, and like, because you weren't allowed to like go out on the trails or do any of that stuff in that 6 week period. You could drive to the grocery store and you could go home.
And then you were so newly there, you didn't even really know anybody.
I didn't know anyone.
So,
yeah. I didn't speak to anyone for like 6 weeks except for the grocery attendants. I was just like, that was who I talked to. It was crazy. So, but really, I mean, looking back, it was an amazing experience. But
what was that like, living in a country for 18 months that has a female leader?
Amazing.
She was really lauded, her response, everything.
Yeah. A lot of the country was really upset with her, and a lot were really happy. So, I mean, she just took care of the people.
Yeah.
And inadvertently taking care of the people killed the economy. But it was just like, well, are we going to choose this? Or are we going to choose this? And frankly, like, it was incredibly safe to be there. And so I was super grateful for like how she handled it.
Interesting. Okay.
And they just kept extending the visa. So I was, you know, I was on the phone like freaking out, like, my visa's gonna expire, like, what do we do? Like,
right.
You know, what am I supposed to do? They're like, don't worry, we're just gonna extend them. And then they just kept extending the visas.
Yeah.
Until kind of near the end, when I really had to actually reapply, and which I did. I reapplied and stayed a little bit longer, and then I was like, okay,
time to come back home.
Yeah, it was time.
So this is sort of like end of 2021, you came back.
Yeah, August of 2021, I flew back to the U.S. and landed up at my mom's. And yeah, and so that's how I ended up in Savannah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I ended up staying because all the doors opened. So I was showing my work with my mom at the Savannah Art Association Gallery. And then
it was on Chippewa Square.
Yeah, it was in Chippewa Square.
So you basically had like thousands of images of like California trees and New Zealand trees.
Yeah,
and
totally.
I guess that was kind of selling, well, but you're also nature. Like trying to get Savannah images too.
Yeah. So whenever I would come to visit for like a week, I would take as many pictures as I could, you know, and a lot of it was kind of the abandoned knee, like broken down,
right.
You know, break and the metal and stuff. So
the decay.
Yeah, the decay.
I guess your images are so striking that even like tourists in Savannah who, you know, maybe don't necessarily want. They didn't come here looking for an image of, like, New Zealand, but your images are really striking, so you're selling them anyway.
Yeah, it's been going really well. Yeah, so while I was still in New Zealand, I ended up actually having a show at the Cork House, and I had, like, a 10-foot wall, and I decided to do a New Zealand-themed show, and not one sold. So I don't know whether it was the venue or because I wasn't there or whatever, but...
That place was like, you had to go down some stairs to get into it. So.
And if they weren't like sending people back there, like who knows?
Right.
Who knows? But that was just kind of like, oh, okay, I guess I have to sell Savannah images. But in reality, it isn't that at all. You know, like it's just, it just wasn't the right venue. And so since I've moved into City Market, like I've never had sales like I've had there. It's been my best place I've ever sold my art.
It's interesting. I wanted to ask you, so you, the way that we know each other is our studios are next to each other at City Market, and you share yours with your mom, and your mom also does two art forms. She does felting and jewelry.
Yes.
Which I think is really funny that both of you have these two different tracks. It's like a thing in your family to just have the two arts.
Totally. Yeah, my aunt, she is also does like amazing, beautiful pottery, but she's a painter as well.
Huh.
Yeah.
Do you, it's funny because it's almost like usually people have sort of a boring day job and then they turn to like an art form to help them from that. But yours is, it's almost funny. It's almost like as if photography at this point is your like prosaic day job. And then the ceramics is like your wild time from that, totally. Which is really funny.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They complement each other well.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So at some point you just like had an interest in the pottery and you sought out the clay community to take lessons. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I didn't take classes. Like, so when I was in Santa Barbara, I was doing pottery there as well. I was doing both. And so I worked out of the UCSB, pottery studio, which was amazing. Dane was, the director and he was just so inviting and the best. Like he just, he really helped like, build up my confidence and like, just gave me the space to like play, you know, and like really try things out.
Yeah.
And then when I got to here in Savannah, I was just, looking for just a way to get out of the house and found Clayer & Co, which again is another amazing space. That's super supportive.
Yeah.
Like they just love to, build up their community.
Is there ever a bad clay community? I feel like people who are into pottery are just all... They're
I don't know.
Really fun and chill and wacky. Right?
Yeah, they're like they're nice people.
Yeah,
yeah, especially there. Like Clayer & Co is the best. Like they've really dialed it in. It's a gorgeous space and super nice people.
Yeah. Your ceramics work is I feel like it's characterized by you do a lot of vessels. It's like mugs and vases and it's a lot of like building on 3D shapes on the outside of it, like maybe animals or leaves or something, or you kind of like carve in shapes into the mugs. It's a lot of that. Is there like a particular way that you came about to your,
that? Yeah. Well, it's a little bit funny. So, throwing on the wheel was, you know, I can do it and I like it to an extent, but, I really got into the hand building when I was in UCSB and part of it was because of this really awful guy who was kind of a know-it-all, would like, He would like, I don't know, if you were throwing near him, he'd just have like a comment constantly, like, you should be doing da da da, or, you know, if you just did this, it would be, you know, it's just like,
right.
Just get like out of my space.
An unsolicited.
Exactly. I'm like, I don't need you to teach me how to throw. Thank you, sir.
And you're so, like, thank you. I wanted this thing to be this lopsided. Okay. Right? This is what I'm going for.
Or even if I didn't ask you.
Yeah.
Dane, you know, it's fine to show me, but I don't want info from this guy.
This is why I don't really love going out in public and painting, which is a bummer because it seems like it'd be really nice to go sit in Forsyth Park and paint, but there's always some jabroni who has to come over your shoulder.
Tell you how to do it.
Yeah. I hate that too. So.
Yeah. It drove me crazy. And so I just stopped throwing on the wheel there because I was so irritated by this guy. So I started hand building and then fell in love with it because there's so much more freedom with the shapes and then also just like being able to stamp and do textures and things like that. It's just easier because when you're throwing, they get really super wet and then you got to wait and then it takes a lot longer. So with hand building, the clay doesn't get as wet, so you can really like do more things
more
faster.
Manipulation.
Yeah.
So the hand building, you can still do round things like mugs or whatever. It's just you're like forming it. So it's not going to be this like perfect little sphere the way on the wheels.
And okay. even my wheel stuff isn't like perfect.
Yeah.
But I like things kind of more in the natural. Like I'm just a nature girl, and so like having a little bit of a wonkiness to it just like makes it funky and like makes my heart happy.
Yeah. And your glazes are like, it's a lot of kind of earthy colors, and then maybe a little color for, you know, the birds or the leaves or something like that.
Yeah. A little splash.
But yeah, they're a lot. It's a very brown and speckled, and they have a vibe. They have like a very California hippie vibe to them, I feel like. Pottery. Like, it feels like if you lived in a little cabin in the woods, it feels like the pottery that you would have there.
Totally.
We could talk a little bit about being in City Market. You have this big space with your mom, and your walls are filled with these metal prints, and then you also at some point also started printing your images onto just paper and matting them, right?
Yeah, so the two options, the metal prints and then the metallic photo paper, it's mounted on styrene. Like, that's my main way of doing the paper prints, because I just noticed that a lot of like artwork over time, when you have it for years and years, it just like it starts to buckle under the frame sometimes, and it just doesn't hold up as well. So and it's easier to like just pop the images right onto the wall with a little bit of tacky or like Velcro tape. You don't necessarily have to frame it, but you can with the styrene. Like that's I like how versatile it is.
So are you making the prints and then mounting onto the styrene yourself, or you
no,
get that done?
No, I send all of my images out to a company to print for me. I just find like to have really good quality that is consistent, and to be really like to be able to count on it being archival.
Yeah.
I feel like it's just much better to have a company do it. And I can't cut straight, even if it was like my life depended on it.
Yeah.
So like cutting like the edges and all that stuff, like it would never look right. It just looks much more professional when I just have it done.
Did it take you a while to work out, like, so in this case, since you're having your images sent out and you have to like order certain quantities, did it take a while to work out like what is selling in what proportions and how many to order out?
So this has been what I found is selling your own art is the best, because when you sit and you see what people look at, like you really get a feel for like what is the public want. And I'm always shooting for myself, but in reality, you know, it's like what I actually print more of or less of is based on like what moves.
Yeah.
So it was super helpful. So before City Market, my mom, myself, and eight other artists opened up Savannah Gallery of Art. And that was really part of the impetus for me to stay. It was like, we opened this gallery. And so I put like a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into that gallery. And it didn't end up working out with my mom and I there, but I really got to get into a rhythm and really see, like, what is it that people get really excited about?
Yeah. And you had a good amount of foot traffic. You were seeing a lot of people come through.
Yeah. Yeah. Tons. So I really honed in on like, okay, this is the style that, that works. And then it also helped me get, just more clear on how do I want to frame things and, you know, like all of the details basically. So
The different like price tiers and different options of how to offer things is interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like I've really dialed that in at this point, based on just sitting the gallery, you know, like and the space and City Market, just like experiencing people, experiencing my work just, hugely helped me figure out like sales stuff.
Yeah. I think it's interesting sometimes, like with my art, sometimes you finish something and you like know it's going to do really well and that people will love it. But sometimes I'm surprised, either in a good way or a bad way, how popular a thing is. Like,
absolutely. You know. I'm constantly surprised at what moves and what doesn't.
Yeah.
Especially with the pottery, where I'm like, this is a piece of poop, but I'm going to put it out there because it's like, it's a vessel, it works. And, you know, and inevitably those move before the ones that I'm so like, funny. I love this piece. You know? It's so funny. Yeah.
That is wild.
Yeah, but I do have those experiences where, like, when I'll take a shot and I'm being like, oh, yeah, this really
sometimes
lands.
You just know, that it's amazing.
You
right
feel
away.
It, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a tuning fork or something.
Yeah.
You have, when I looked at your website, is your photography, your website is very pretty, and it's really well organized with the different categories of all the, like, areas of photography. And the two that I loved, I mean, you've spoken about this already, but you have, like, an abandoned cars category, and I also love this sort of, like, close-ups of rust or like factories or parts like that. And then you have this other category called water in sand.
Oh, yeah.
It's really photo pretty where it's like you know, looking back at sand where like a wave has washed through and then just looking at the patterns left in the sand. And then you take a photo of that, which it's such a cool, like, it's like layers of art, like the nature, the water just happened to make this like painting. And then you take a photo of that. It was, I don't know, it's just a very interesting, like, style of photography. I hadn't really seen other people hone in on that and do so many pieces like that.
Yeah, that whole series. So I had three series come out of this one dog sitting stay, where I was dog sitting in Malibu at this little place called Paradise Cove, and it's hilarious there. It's like it'll blow your mind. Like there's the trailers are $2 million trailers.
Wow.
And they're trailers.
How big are they?
It's a trailer.
Okay. You know, it's just like a one bedroom.
Some of them are double wides, but they're trailers. Okay. Like when you get down to it. And
California is just really its own.
It's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's location, you know? And so it was on a cliffside, and the bay that it opened up to, Paradise Cove, was stunning. And they had like a whole rainbow colors of rocks. Like there was these bright blue sections and red sections and orange, like, and so I just got super into the details. And I don't understand how or why, but the sand, like when the waves would crash over and wash away, the sands would make these patterns. And there was like this black sand that was super contrasty to the regular
almost like volcanic.
Yeah, sand, yeah, but it was like threads of it, and it would create these beautiful images. And so I just got so excited about the details there. So water and sand paintings came out of that Paradise Cove. I did rocked and abstract look at geology and the now still life of seaweed. So I did all the seaweed that was there as well.
Yes, you do a lot of various different cataloging of, like, it's like the after effects of nature passing through something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. As you were talking, I was thinking just in general that, like, I guess there's not a lot of photography. There's not a lot of, like, abstract photography, which is funny. Like, people will make and buy abstract paintings, but for some reason in the entire field of photography, it's more about, like, showing a realistic image.
It seems like it. I mean, I found, like, once I really started to get into that genre, I did find that there was quite a lot of people doing it as well. But the colors and the textures and just the shapes, like the compositions that you come up with they just make me so excited.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how it just seems unusual or whatever. But especially the images that are printed on the metal are like, they're so saturated and sharp looking. So it's like a different look than just a painting of the same abstracted image would be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yay. you have some, and you've done some in the Okefenokee Swamp too, which I love. Can you talk a little bit about the swamp? I love the swamp.
Yeah, that Okefenokee is the best. So I can't remember how I stumbled across it, but I figured out that it wasn't that far away from here. It's about a 4-hour drive. And at the park that I go to, it's called the Stephen Foster State Park, I think. They have campground, they have houses you can rent, very reasonably priced. And then right there at the water edge, there's like a Forest Service station, and they rent kayaks, canoes, motorboats, like all the things that you could possibly want to like get in the water with. And so I would go out there, camp for a night or two, and go kayaking, like rent a kayak. And then there's like miles of water trails out there. And it's spectacular. Like, it's so beautiful. It's just another environment that I hadn't been exposed to yet.
Do you run into many other people kayaking around? Or
there were some.
Like, how dense is the...
Like, sometimes, like, one trip, there was barely anybody else out there. And then the second trip I went, there was, like, quite a lot of people out on the water.
Yeah.
But it wasn't disturbing. Like, there's so much space. And the other cool thing, I haven't done it yet, but they've got platforms that you can camp overnight out on.
Oh.
So you can take your boat, like fill it all up with your camping supplies, and just spend the night out in the swamp. And it's not actually a true swamp because the water is moving. So
is that like the definition of a swamp? Is that the water is
standing,
just
water
placid?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess that's somebody said that fact to me.
Good trivia.
Like, oh, okay. Yeah, exactly. And it wasn't buggy at all because the cypress trees, like, they release tannins into the water. So it keeps it kind of non-buggy.
Really?
Yeah.
Tannins like in wine? Is it the kind same yeah, tannins?
I think so. Maybe a little bit different. I'm not sure. Yeah, so that was really fun. It is, like, people do get, like, nervous about it because there's tons of alligators.
Yes.
And there's massive.
And there's snakes.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't run across any snakes.
Yeah, I mean, Georgia has some crazy wildlife.
Yeah, they really do.
Yeah.
So that part was kind of fun. Like, I like the adventure, and I like a little bit of danger, just a little bit.
Yeah.
Just to, like, bring some
excitement. The snakes and gators.
There's plenty of that.
Do you ever, if you're taking a kayak and you're, like, going out into these little tributaries, did you ever have a hard time finding your way back to where you started from?
Not at all. Okay. They're so clear, you know, because I didn't actually, like, go off trail, you know, like, when I'm in the forest, like, sometimes I'll go off trail, but in the swamp, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Because that's, you're way more likely to disturb wildlife if you are going, like, in the place that people don't go.
Oh, that people aren't tramping through.
Yeah.
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 Have you ever had any kind of, like, close call or scary run-in?
With animals? When I was out at Glacier, we had hiked up to Grinnell Glacier, and there's a lot of wildlife out there. And so we saw some bighorn sheep and the goats, that, like, a whole goat family. But as we were coming down the mountain, that was a little scary because we started to hear, like, some pretty intense rustling in the bushes, and it turns out it was a grizzly bear, and it was kind of tracking us. So we kind of ran a little bit. I know you're not really supposed to run, but, like, we went as fast as we could, made a lot of noise, and then came upon another group of people, and, like, they were, like, yelling and making as much noise as they could, so that was fine.
If, like, there's a lot of people around, the bear kind of won't come out?
I think, yeah, but it kept following us. Yeah. Like, it was tracking.
Did you see it, or you just heard a lot of rustling?
It was for sure a bear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I ran into another bear when I was solo hiking. That was in Washington, but I scared it more than it scared me.
Really? Was it a black bear?
Yeah, it was a black bear. Yeah. And I was out early in the morning, and it just wasn't expecting to see a human. I was like, ah! And then it fell and hit its chin on the log.
Oh, little
poor
bear.
Little guy. And then ran.
I was once jogging alone near the Laurel Grove South Cemetery, and I came across a gator. It was just sort of sunning itself on a path. And then another time I was kind of walking alone through the woods somewhere outside of Savannah, and there was a snake right off the path, and I took a photo and posted it to my Instagram story, and everybody replied and was like, that's a copperhead.
Oh no.
Which is scary.
I still haven't seen a copperhead.
I'll show you this
moccasin.
Photo.
Yeah. I haven't seen any snakes out here.
Yeah. It was an intimidating, I was on a path, and it was just a couple feet off the path, and it was just a pile, like a coiled up brown thing. And it had a really intense patterning on it. But I mean, Georgia's just crazy how you're just minding. Like, I was just minding my own business, either jogging or walking, and coming across these really intense things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Snakes are no joke. Like, I spent 5 years in Southeast Asia, and there were some cobra incidences that were really scary. As we were doing a hike through the jungle at one point, and luckily we had a dog with us, and the dog started barking and alerted us to the fact that there was something over there. But this, like, cobra was in the water, like a little stream.
Wow.
And it kind of stood up and got its hood up, and it was, like, within striking distance.
Yeah.
And I haven't thought about this in a long time, but it does hypnotize you. Like, when I came down and saw it, I just stopped and I was like, whoa.
Yeah, it's very shocking.
And I just froze. Like, I wasn't thinking about anything. It just made me stop.
Yeah.
And one of the friends I was with came down the trail and saw what it was, and then shoved me
to, yeah,
like, keep
frozen.
Walking.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
So that was scary.
Yeah, when I came across the gator, I stopped, and it was not that far away from me. It was on this, like, gray walking path, and so it kind of blended in. And it was, like, an adult gator that was draped across the path, and I saw, like, its tail was this huge scaly thing, and it was just, like, a big prehistoric-looking monster. And I was scared, and then I backed away.
Totally.
Okay, well, I also sort of wanted to ask a bit about how you manage your day-to-day life with your business, because you are still doing your, like, your body work business.
Yeah.
How much, like, do you like having a routine, or is every day different? And how do you, like, one day you're doing ceramics? Like, how do you do all this?
Yeah. So it does change every week. Basically, I feel like 3/4 of my income right this second is, like, the art, the photography, pottery, and one quarter is the body work. But every month it changes, so it just like depends on how many clients are coming in. So week to week is, I basically just wait to see who signs up for sessions, and then figure out like what days I have open. So then, because what's so nice about sharing the space with my mom, she covers like half the time at City Market, sometimes more than half. And I cover the other half. And so we kind of switch off days, and we just kind of switch it around. And with the pottery, I work out of that community, like open studio space at Claire & Co. And so I also am basing on the days, like when I actually want to go in and like sit the gallery on days that's not open studio. So I'll just kind of do 4-hour stints at the pottery place, and then I'll go out and see a client or two at my office for craniosacral, and then you know, I'm just shooting in between. So
where are you shooting lately?
Well, yesterday I finally went to Bonaventure.
Oh my gosh.
I hadn't been there since I was probably like 20 something, you know, it's been forever.
Well, right now it's the Azalea time, so it's like incredible.
Yeah. I was like, I got to get there before the flowers go away. And so I took the afternoon yesterday to go shoot there, and I'm actually really excited with some of the images I got. And they're not even really like gravesite images. They're just like flower and tree
and the trees.
And
yeah.
The Spanish moss hanging down with the light, you know, like the sunlight in the afternoon with Spanish moss is just like
the magic hour.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah. And it's cool. There's that section of Bonaventure Cemetery where you're looking out onto, I guess, the Savannah River. You're looking out onto some water body, which is interesting too.
Yeah, because of where I live, you know, that part isn't as exciting because I live on the water, but, the light was perfect yesterday, so that's why I was shooting, there, but.
Do you have any, sort of upcoming goals for your art? Anything?
Well, the next tree, in my tree pilgrimage project came, 2 months ago while I was in a, like a meditation call, and, I figured out that I'm pretty sure it's in Bulgaria. So that's my next trip. Yeah. So I'm working on saving up for that. And, I really want to get out to the Boabs in Madagascar as well, but a specific tree hasn't reached out to me yet. So that's kind of on pause.
Talk about snakes.
Oh my gosh.
Madagascar seems scary as well.
There's a lot of wildlife there too.
Is there a particular, like a national forest in Bulgaria?
Yes.
Is it? I guess it's very mountainy there, right?
Yeah. There, like right down the center of the country is, I can't remember how to say it, but it's like the forest, it begins with an S. And so I'm pretty sure the tree is somewhere in there, but like kind of near the coast. It's been a while since I've done a tree trip.
Yeah.
And, going to a country that doesn't speak English, that's been even longer. So I can feel a little bit of like, oh, you know, a little bit of nervousness of like having to like get into the flow of that whole travel, version of life.
Right. It's like an ambitious trip.
Yeah. And it's a big deal. And it's like what I get a little bit nervous about is like the flexibility I had with here, in the U.S. and even in New Zealand, you know, I had like all the time in the world to like find it or not find it and like explore. With Bulgaria, like especially at this time in my life, like I don't have like 6 months to just wander the forest there this time. So the pressure to like find it within a certain amount of time, like that part feels a little like, ooh. But I found that first tree on the first day. So I just have to remind myself that it'll be fine.
That's
like
wild.
It'll all work out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost like if it was a movie, it's like you'd have to paint what image you had, and then you arrive and you have to seek out like some local expert.
You're like, hey, have you seen this
tree? Somebody who's like grown up living amongst the forests of Bulgaria. And he's like, yes, I know where that is.
I know exactly what tree that is.
His name is Herbert. I will take you.
Herbert has been waiting. You finally arrived.
But you just have to do this all on your own.
Yeah.
You just have to go out and find it.
Pretty much. Well, you know, what was interesting is like the rules of the game kept changing. So like the first two trips I did with the trees, that was like dreams, and then getting led once I found one tree, then that led me to a bunch of trees in the area. But the second phase was like my intuition and the dreams all stopped, and it was like taken away, and it was almost like I was abandoned by the trees, and I'm out in the middle of nowhere trying to find like where I'm supposed to go, and I could just, it was the hardest trip. Like, I had a lot of trouble and deep surrender. Like, it just made me surrender that much more. And then they started sending me people. So people would like show, like I'd sit down at the restaurant, the bar, whatever, have dinner. And like at one place, this guy sits down and he's having dinner and asking me like, why am I in the area? And I'm telling him I'm doing this tree project. And then he's like, oh, well, let me tell you about larch trees. And like, I'd never really heard about larch trees. And it turns out like literally the place on the map that I was like, okay, I have to go there next in Montana, it was a larch tree. And so like people just started showing up to like tell me.
You had some happenstance things.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really neat.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Do you have any like future goals in Savannah? Like other places you want to show your art or any kind of like final words about the art scene in Savannah?
Oh, the Savannah art scene. Well, yeah. I'm just such a solo person that we've joked about this. Like, I never know what's going on in the city. So, I would really like to get a little bit more involved and be a little bit more part of the community. But no exact plans.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for sitting down and talking to me. This was fascinating.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate listening to my story.
And we will post, I'll post links to your Instagrams and the tree project and then a bunch of photos for you.
Perfect.
Thank you so much. Thanks. This was Molly Cusick at Arts on the Air.